Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to 2018, our first podcast of the year.
It is.
We're back.
When was the last one we did? Was the last one we did when you were going to the 2 p.m. Leafs game? I'm serious. I think that's when it was. That feels ages ago.
I know.
And yet the 17-day break, for me, it's too long because the weather's so bad. As a parent, I would much rather, what would I want? I want, so that, like, 10 school days you miss, right? Out of a Christmas break? Is that, like, that's standard, right, for high school and elementary school? So let's shave that down to 7. And I want 3 days added to Easter. Americans get a longer Easter. What's wrong with that? Better weather? There's playoff sports on? Baseball's on?
And in certain parts of the country, too, the issue, too, with kids being home, it was so cold.
They can't go outside.
Kids can't go outside and play.
That is our part of the country where we live in Toronto. It was minus 20 for about 6-7 straight days.
Can't have that.
I had the kids at the gym. They swam, like soccer. But you're right. At a certain point in time, it was time to go back to school before it was actually time to go back to school. And April would... I think that's perfect. Or I don't know whether we can extend Victoria Day. That's bad.
Nice.
I know. It would be nice to go.
We have a lot of holidays in the summer, though.
To loop from a Friday through a Tuesday. But I want to take the 3 days that none of us get. Now, you can't take a longer trip. If you wanted to go to, where'd you go? Hawaii in the fall?
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it harder if someone wants to plan a long family trip or a long couples trip or a long anything trip with friends or whomever. And it makes it harder if they want to go far, like Melbourne. Like, we'll talk about the tennis in a little bit.
Open.
But it would take you, nobody goes to Australia for 9 days because it takes you 2 days to get there and 2 days back. And it takes you a day on each side probably to figure out where the hell you are and why you went.
Yeah, you need a ton of vacation.
You do.
Universities now, a lot of them, I was talking to my cousins over the holidays, they have 2 reading weeks now. They have one in the fall and in the winter.
I did not know that. Yeah. I honestly didn't. So it's not in February.
No, there is one in February, and there's one in the fall.
Oh, my gosh. Well, but December would still be exams, right?
Yes. I think they have it around in October, just before midterms.
And once I got to university, I well preferred that system because I know, I think the last exam I had to write 1 year was like 3 p.m. on December 23rd. It's just the way this, and so then you're like, oh God, I'm so stressed out about it. But then at least you can breathe over the Christmas holidays and New Year's.
And you have 2 weeks off. But I think when you're in it and you're in school, you're thinking, oh, I'd rather have time off beforehand.
But didn't it hang over you like an axe in high school over Christmas when I knew I had exams starting January 12th or something and I wasn't studying over Christmas because you're seeing friends and you're going out and there's New Year's and there's this and that.
You'd rather get it done.
You'd rather get it over with. Yeah, life's about getting it over with sometimes.
So now I know January, it's a depressing time of year. They call, I think it's Blue Monday's the third Monday in January. And they call it Blue Monday because they say it is scientifically proven to be the most depressing time of the year.
Like seasonal mood disorders.
Yeah, because of the time since Christmas, the times till vacation and warm weather. But you know what keeps us going in January other than the NFL playoffs? The Australian Open is back.
That's right.
I'm very excited. It begins this weekend.
It lines right up with, I think, way more with your way of life and your patterns, your physical patterns, your physiological patterns than mine. It's hard for me to see matches.
Yeah.
It really is, except on weekends.
I go to bed at 4 a.m. usually, so I can watch when I get home from work at 2:30.
Now,
I can watch an hour.
What I don't enjoy, before we get into some of the specifics of it, and we'll talk about Milos and Dennis and Jeannie, but what I don't like is the move. They transitioned several years ago from – at least Eastern time, your women's final would be like a Friday night at 10:30 p.m.
Now
it's like 3:30 in the morning. And your men's final would be a Saturday night. I think they want it to be in prime time in Europe the next day. And they don't mind if it on the West Coast, like in L.A. and Vancouver.
That's true.
It's midnight. But it's also, they must want it so badly to be nighttime in Australia and prime time there. So I don't like it. I would much rather...
Rough.
I can't tell you how many times I've tried to set an alarm or thought about it or had an early morning flight for an NFL trip and I wake up and I'm like, I meant to get up 2 hours earlier. I think I woke up with a Djokovic Nadal match in the fifth set of the final, and I hadn't taped it, and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, and I know it sounds monotonous to go that you'd go back and watch the first 4 hours, but I might have. Or I would have liked to have seen it live.
It's tricky. It's the hardest slam for us in North America to watch. I'm excited, though. This is going to be an interesting year. Last year, no one expected it to be the renaissance of Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer, and it was. And the Australian Open was the start of that, with those two in the final. And then in the women's final, you had Serena beating Venus. I don't think that's all going to happen again this year. Now, Federer and Nadal, they could win a slam. I don't expect them to be dominant all year long. What I'm hoping to see this year, because there's still players who are out with injury. We see Andy Murray. He's out indefinitely right now as he's had hip surgery. But is I think this is finally the year we've been waiting for, where the Zverevs, the Kyrgios, Dimitrov, these are the guys who push through, and maybe one of them will finally win a slam. Kyrgios looks really good. I know he's a wild card because you never know if he's going to come to play or if he'll kind of just give up in a match, which he clearly obviously does. But he seems to be in a good headspace right now. He just won Brisbane. Things are looking good. I'm hoping for a good year from him.
It's like we're saying with life, the goal sometimes is just to get something over with. That's what Kyrgios does with his losses. I mean,
it's true.
He doesn't prolong the agony.
No.
And fans can head to the concession stand a little earlier for the next match. So I'm looking at the odds, and neither of us are gamblers, but Roger Federer is the favorite at a 2.75-1. Nadal is second favorite. Djokovic is 7-1. Gregor Dimitrov 10-1. Zverev 12-1. And Juan Martín Del Potro, who pounded Dennis Shapovalov this week.
He looks great.
He looked great beating him. Yeah, he really did. Is 16-1.
But I'd love to see him do well.
I agree. Djokovic is probably the biggest factor. How will he look, having really not, he wasn't himself at Wimbledon in the least.
No.
He won last year's French Open. He won the French Open and Australian Open 2 years ago. And once he got to 12 slams, and remember, Roger's sitting at 17, Djokovic is at 12, and on a pace of continuing to win two a year, you could see some passage. Now, Federer's gone to 19, Djokovic stuck at 12. It's just going to be a lot harder the way men's bodies are breaking down, and when you win your last major, you said it. I think Federer's when was his? I'm looking for when his 17th was, and it was the fall. It was a U.S. No, it was Wimbledon of 2012.
Yeah,
and then to go four whole calendar years, 16 slams, 17 slams without winning, you'd be naturally inclined to think, well, that's it, and he's stuck at 17, and Djokovic at 12 could catch him. A lot harder now. A lot harder. But, I mean, I'm so curious to see how Djokovic plays.
Yeah, I have no idea. And the tricky thing is, too, is especially in January, the tournaments leading up to the Australian Open, they are more warm-up tournaments for a slam than any other time of year
because of the
they're
time
coming
off
the break.
Right.
And until you get into the heat in Australia and the five-set matches to start the year, until you see a couple of those matches from guys, you don't know how they're going to play. You don't know how they're going to respond. Hope for a good year from Milos. We hope for good health, but we'll see. And Denis Shapovalov, it's building on last year, and the trick is going to be getting through some of those tough matches.
It tells you something.
He still has to break through.
They're both long, long shots. I will read this only to make a point. Shapovalov's a 76-1 underdog. But guess what? There's only, if I run this down, 13 names ahead of him. Is he the 14th seed? No, he isn't. He's 50th ranked. But it tells you the impact that, A, everybody knows him, that they'd consider putting, you know, a couple bucks on him. He's got better odds than Jack Sock, who somehow is the number 8 player in the world.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem right that the number 50 player would have better odds to go all the way. But I think it's interesting because for the amount of people that you would talk to about tennis and I might talk to about tennis, most people I know, they're naturally more inclined. And I don't even think it's that he's 9.5 years younger. It's just it's what you know recently. And the way Shapovalov's last 6 months were compared to the inactivity for Milos Raonic with the injury, there's naturally more of an inclination to be excited, I guess, about the 2018 that Shapovalov could have, even though Milos is, 30 ranking spots ahead of him.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing, too, with Shapovalov, and one of the reasons that he got so much attention, it wasn't just because of his age and who he was beating. It was how he was beating them and how he was playing. He has a fun style of tennis. And already, if I'm looking through Twitter of the warm-ups for the Australian Open, they are just showing so many hot shots from Shapovalov already, even if it's in matches where he's lost.
Yeah.
Even in the one against Del Potro. They're showing his backhand down the line because it's flashy and it's fun and it's cool to watch.
The compliments keep coming from John McEnroe, right? He says, if I see somebody that looks like me on tour, and he's probably right, it's him. It's not all power. There's some finesse with Shapovalov.
Yes.
There's the left-handed serve, quite obviously, left-handed ground strokes, obviously, too. But McEnroe, it's such a different game than when McEnroe came up, and it all feels like it's about power, and you don't see drop shots and you don't see serve and volley depending on the surface quite as much. But I can't think of a player, and you'd probably tell me it is Zverev to a great extent, but I can't think of a young player that, not everyone's going to watch the Rogers Cup, but all eyes were on the U.S. Open. So when he started beating players ranked higher than him at the U.S. Open, and he lost that match, the daytime match that he lost, I just think it woke everybody up to him. And it's one thing for Raonic to be interesting and hanging around. It's another thing for maybe the second or third most exciting young player under the age of 25 to be Canadian. And that's stylist. That's style.
20 too.
Way under 25. That's my point. Yeah, exactly. There's about a 4 or 5 year gap where there just isn't. There are guys that you're just waiting to, and they might. Dominic Thiem might break through. We were waiting on Dimitrov. We were waiting on David Goffin. But there's more than enough players that aren't, they don't have the groundswell of support, knowledge, and young potential that Shapovalov
has.
And consistency. Yeah. Now, quick on the women's side, Serena's not playing. Do you read much into that or beyond the concept that she is worth taking at her word here and that she wants to be ready when she's ready?
I think she'll be ready when she's ready. She doesn't want to play, as she said, until she's ready to win. So why come and play if you're Serena if you're only going to win a couple matches? What's the point? So I'm with her. I don't think anyone wants to see her if she's not at her best. And if she doesn't feel she's at her best yet, so be it. She had her baby in September. I mean, she's done remarkable, incredible things, but don't rush into it. And when she comes back, I think she will still be very, very good.
And it's a full year for Maria Sharapova on tour. But my wife's been listening to her audiobook and she finds it fascinating.
Yeah.
She's absolutely compelled by it.
Really?
And
I need to read it.
She said she likes it as much as the Agassi book, which is a grand statement.
Wow.
And I said, is she cleaning her house at night because of ingesting crystal meth? She said, no. So there's some differences and similarities, but the rivalry with, she's so open and honest. And I think she has had a, don't give a crap factor about the, she's not, hey, I'm not going to put this in because the Williams sisters might read it. She doesn't care. She does not care. And she talks about how when she beat Serena, when she won her first slam at Wimbledon when she was 17, she heard Serena crying and Serena knew that she heard her crying. And she said the relationship was never the same after that. They both wanted to absolutely pummel each other. And that's okay. You're not supposed to, we think of individual sports and like when the Ryder Cup happens and all the golfers are buddy-buddy, I think you should want to. Denis Shapovalov should have a great respect and renown for Milos Raonic, and he should want to kill him on the tennis court.
Yeah,
he should
absolutely
want to be the top Canadian.
Yeah.
Vasek Pospisil would and does, right?
Yeah. I need to read Sharapova's book. The one thing, I watched her documentary, and to me it was good, but it was just a PR move. So then I remember going into Indigo on the day that Sharapova's book was released, and it was like $40, and it wasn't a thick book. And I thought, something that's going to – it wasn't even about the $40. It was like, I can't give my money to this PR move. Like, I feel like it – but now I'm hearing it's good. I guess
You'd read it for free if I – you know, if a copy magically showed up on the desk table there.
Yeah.
The last thing on Shapovalov, I absolutely am forgetting, and you'd remember this because you went to New York, that he was a qualifier. Like, that's how far it's come in 5 months that he had to play 3 qualifying matches, play Tsonga in the second round.
Yes.
I forget that he beat him in straight sets.
Yes.
So it tells you, and I forgot the guy's name, Pablo Carreño Busta. How could I forgot?
And you know
PCB.
What? And that...
wiping him out.
And that match, too, Shapovalov didn't play well, and yet he was still kind of in and out of the
all
match.
All tiebreaks.
Yeah.
All tiebreaks.
So it was kind of on his racket.
Yeah, it was. I can't wait. You got me more excited than I was 18 minutes ago.
Yeah. Why sleep for a straight when you can just
I have a lot of reasons for
tennis.
That. Because I end up when the mouth has to do things on little sleep, it is very,
it's not
very
good.
No, things just
brain does not like it.
Pop right out. We are very pleased to welcome in our next guest. He has double duty this weekend in the Twin Cities. And what a sports weekend to be there. What a month, really, over the next 4 weeks to be there. Vancouver, Minnesota, by the way, is hometown hockey on Sunday night at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet. And he's got Winnipeg, those high-flying Jets, battling Minnesota on Sportsnet 1 and City TV at 7 o'clock. And getting to spend some time in, I think of it more as Prince's Town, but for this moment alone, it's Dave Randorf's town, and he joins us from Hockey Night in Canada and Sports. I don't know, are you a guitar virtuoso? Were you ever a musician or a magician, really?
Not a magician. I always wanted to learn. I do tricks for my kids, and I bought the books and everything, but I just never applied myself. I've got a guitar, and I play a little tiny bit, but certainly nothing like, Prince. But it's going to be a fun weekend for sure, just taking all the vibe of everybody being excited about the playoff game on Sunday. And it's a great place to see a hockey game. It really is. They love hockey there. The place is always full. It's a good team. And Saturday night, that's a big game, Winnipeg and Minnesota. That's a big boy Central Division game. And then on Sunday, Brock Besser, he makes his return. That's where Brock Mania started,
yeah.
If you remember correctly. He made his NHL debut about 48 hours after his college team had been knocked out of the NCAA playoffs, was in the starting lineup with the Sedins, scored a goal in his home state. So it'll be two interesting days for sure.
What have you thought of Brock thus far this season? I mean, I know the obvious is he'll probably be the rookie of the year. But what strikes me is that all the goals he scores seem to be spectacular and skillful.
Well, he's got, as everybody says, an elite shot, elite release and an elite shot. But with what goes with that, too, is just being in position to take the shot. And that's hard in itself these days to find a quiet zone. He's not a small guy. He positions himself in such a way, he thinks the game. And in talking, I've talked several times now with their head coach, Travis Green. He says his hockey IQ is very good. He wants to get better at both ends. He's not a kid that's going to be taking shortcuts. He's been brought up the right way on and off the ice. He really is a humble guy. So I love that about him because Vancouver's hockey mad about their Brock star, and as they should be. At the beginning of the season, I was on a show in Vancouver, and I almost blurted it out. And this is like week one. And I wish I'd had, because I said, I don't see any reason why. And, I can quantify this now. I don't see any reason why that if he is what he has shown us so far in his 9 games last year and in the preseason, that I don't see there was any reason why he could not lead the team in goals. And now, of course, that's going to happen for sure. Now the question is he going to lead, is he going to win the league in goals? Or certainly, is he going to be one of the top goal scorers in the league? And I think the answer to that is going to be yes as well. The second half will be a bigger challenge for him as teams, as word travels. But it doesn't take long for word to get out. So I think it's been out already for a while. But Canuck fans deserve this. It's been a few hard years, and there's a few more hard years ahead. And this is a great building block that they can see and feel and touch and realize that something better is coming down the line.
Well, and I think, it's not so similar to the Leafs 2 seasons ago, Dave, but there is that sense that, yeah, the regular season results are starting to wane somewhat, and they may settle into where a lot of people predicted they'd be, get another great player. But the feeling of the players they do have has to have increased with Besser. It has to. Bo Horvat out of the lineup hurts, but seeing some of what is there after getting through, a couple dodgy drafts, it's sort of like the Leafs were there. They saw Nylander play some games. They knew what Marner was doing in his 19-year-old season, and they knew they'd get a great draft pick coming up and get and they didn't know they'd win the lottery and get the transcendent Austin Matthews. But it has to feel that way, at least, that like the tough sledding has to be for a reason that they're going through right now. They have to believe in that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you, as a fan, you do not want to go through all these lame seasons and then just miss the playoffs. The old saying, right? That's what went on in Toronto for years and in large part in Vancouver when they missed the playoffs. They just miss. In other words, they get a pick somewhere in the middle of the first round or you know, up around 8 or 9 or 10, which is harder to hit on. And then, of course, when they did bottom out, they dropped 4 spots in the lottery a couple of years ago and ended up with Ole Ulevi. They could have taken Matthew Tkachuk, but they passed on him and they took on Ole Ulevi, who knows, may end up being a solid defenseman down the line. That's a position where I think everybody agrees you have to give it time. And he's back in Finland grooming his game under the watchful eyes of the likes of Sammy Salo, who is a very good and serviceable defenseman in the NHL and for the Canucks. And you know, they can also see other parts that are coming along. There was some guys like Gadjevich of the World Juniors and Pedersen for Sweden, who looks awesome. Everybody's going gaga over his skill level. And other players that are coming that are in Utica. Adam Gaudette is another name that comes up a lot. So there's a bunch of prospects that they can say that they are looking forward to seeing. And more, you know, you look at you don't have to look too far, you know, away from Vancouver. Calgary's been dipping into their farm system heavily this year. Mm-hmm. They've got guys like Garnet Hathaway has come up. Mark Jankowski has come up. They just brought up another kid named Andrew Mangiapane from the Toronto area. And these guys don't look out of place right now anyway. And they're all contributing and playing a role in a team that is slowly getting traction in a difficult conference and division. So that's important. You need to have players from within to push other players and to give you depth for just to compete right off the bat, and also to help out when guys like Bo Horvat and Sven Berge get hurt, because the Canucks have certainly had their fair share of injuries on top of everything else. But I think the main concern coming into this season in Vancouver is what are we doing here? You know, we've still got the Sedins. Are they going to get first-line minutes here? Are they still going to defer to the Sedins? They brought in Vanek. What's that all about? And Delzato, a couple of veterans. What are we doing here? Are we 1 foot in, 1 foot out? And I think everything has evened out. I think Travis Green has impressed a lot of people with his vision and plan, and his ability to recognize who's going on any given night. And to move the lines around, not stay, you know, stuck with the Sedins in this role and they're going to play 20 minutes a night. They're not, and they haven't been for a long time. And they're fine with it. They understand where they are in their careers as well. So it appears as though the Canucks do have a plan, and we're starting to see it. And Besser is a big part of that.
It was just last month, actually, that Travis Green, during practice, he was screaming out at Anders Nilsson to stop the puck. I mean, goaltending's been a big issue for the Canucks, and Green, he's been obviously frustrated a couple times on the ice, which makes me think of Glenn Gulletson recently throwing his stick in practice, and everybody was making a big deal about it. The Flames, they're playing well right now, but what did you make of his little outburst?
That happened the day before we did a game last Saturday night against Anaheim, and so the Flames, they were coming off a win on last Thursday night against the LA Kings. And, they were full value. They had a very average, if not poor, first period against LA. We're down 2-0 right off the bat against a team that, they're chasing. And they need some points. And they come back with an excellent second period with 4 5-on-5 goals to take the lead, which they never relinquished, and beat the Kings. It was a good win. Very good win. And people around the Flames that have seen every game, I've seen a bunch, but not all of them, and a lot of people who were around there say that was probably their best period of the season. So that's great. So you're allowed to feel good about it, but, you need speaking to Glenn Gulletson a lot this season. He's got this one saying that I like. It's an everyday league. You know, you can't be patting yourselves on the back for 2-3 days, because guess what? Anaheim's coming in here. And they wrote the book on grinding things out and getting down in the pig pen and knocking you in the mouth. And Louis DeBrusque had a great replay sequence on Saturday night when he was talking about how physical they are. And he says, they are a cross-check first team. They lead with a cross-check and then grind you into the boards. And he had all the video to back it up. They're hard. And Gulletson knew what was coming at home on a Saturday. And yeah, they'd won 2 in a row, but Carolina, they had not won 3 in a row since early November. So there's nothing to, there's no parade happening here yet. They were still on the outside looking in, and they needed those 2 points as well, which ultimately they did, because whether you liked the stick throwing thing or not, and whether you thought it was a little too orchestrated or whatever, it worked. It got their attention. Practice got better, and they were very good on that Saturday. That was a really good game on Saturday night, and the Flames are full value, and Anaheim rallied in the second, but that's because they're, or sorry, the third period, but that's because they're a good team too and a veteran team. But in the end of the day, the Flames not only won there, but they backed it up with another win on the road in Minnesota. So who knows? You know, if they can get on a nice little roll here, people may look back at that stick throwing thing and say, well, maybe every coach will start tossing his stick up into the stands.
So yeah, some will get him higher in the stands than others. There's
I did give him a demonstration sport. I did give him a shot about that after our little chat broke up. I said, you know, I was sitting in the bowl, and it's really not that far. So sweet. I'm a little disappointed you didn't get into the upper deck. And he laughed and said that next time. But he's got a great sense of humor. Mm-hmm. He is, but at the same time, he is business, and he's got a side to him that he openly says to guys like me, media members that we don't see all the time, and that bubbles under the surface. And so, you know, there's a lot of stress involved in the National Hockey League. Look at the standings. Everybody thinks they're still in it. And there is a ton of bosses to answer to when you're not in that top eight. And it's an everyday stressful situation for the coaches and GMs. And we make light of this right now and the whole stick throwing thing. But the bottom line is, Gullitson needs to get this team to wake up and play to their potential. And I'm sure there were other things said on top of these tossing the stick. There's nothing more frustrating than a team that's relatively healthy that is underachieving just because they're not ready to play. That is highly frustrating for coaches and for fans who watch the team. And that's what Gullitson's trying to do there.
You were front and center for the Oilers in the playoffs last year. So I'm sure you get stopped here and there. And I'm sure buddies message you and they say, you're seeing them up close. You're around the teams occasionally doing their games. What on earth? We all had incredibly high expectations, and it's easy to say they haven't got the goaltending, and of course they haven't. They're 26th in save percentage, 26th in goals against, but there just seems to be so much more than that. Like, beyond our wildest low expectations for where Edmonton is right now. And as you know, it doesn't get better next year, potentially, because Connor McDavid makes about $9 million more next year, and it's harder to fill in gaps and holes when he's, you know, choking the salary cap, and he earned every penny, but it's going to be harder next year.
Mm-hmm. You're right about that. Do I get asked about the Oilers? It's probably the number one thing I get asked by friends, by people on the street, whether I'm in the West or not. And I do a lot of games out in the West, but it's the number one thing that I've been asked to this point in the season, for sure. I'm sure I'm not alone for all the reasons that you just mentioned. And to me, this is the worst type of regression. And by that, I mean, they can't point to Connor McDavid being hurt or Leon Draisaitl being hurt. They're healthy. They've had, you know, a couple of injuries. Klefbom was out for a little while. Cam Talbot, obviously their number one goalie, was out for a stretch, but he's back and he's playing all right. And it goes way deeper than that. Right now, they've got their whole team. At Christmas time, these guys were quite happy that they reached a goal. They got back to .500 with a win against the Montreal Canadiens right before the Christmas break. And they wanted to carry that over coming out of the break. And then they went into Winnipeg, played an excellent game. It was a really good game, one of the better games I've called in the regular season in a while. And they lost 4-3, but it was a hard fought. They were right there till the end and almost tied at the end. And you know, you walked away going, okay, well, this is a team that may be ready to turn the corner, because the Edmonton Oilers of October, November would have withered under the pressure of the Winnipeg Jets in their barn, you know, midway through that game, and it would have been, you know, not close. But they were right there. Since that game, it's been a disaster. They've won once. I think they're 1-5-1, if I'm not mistaken, or 1-4-1, and there's been a bunch of blowouts in there. And yeah, okay, they played a little bit better in Nashville the other night, but it's still a loss, and moral victories aren't meaning anything right now. So it's just, they're going back to their old ways of just not being ready, not playing up to their potential. The laundry list of reasons why has been well documented and much discussed on talk radio. And it has a lot to do with, you know, not getting anything from the wings. They moved Draisaitl off the Connor McDavid line, hoping that he could drive a line. He's not. And he's not getting a lot of help on either one of his wings either. So they're still experimenting there. Talbot has been okay. He hasn't been great. He hasn't been of the form that he was last year. And the defense has been suspect. Their number one pair last year was Adam Larson and Oscar Klefbom. And that's a good pairing. It's not an elite number one pair, but they played like it for the most part last year. Klefbom contributed a bunch of offense. Larson was hard. He was amongst the league leaders at hits. And those two have been split up for a large part of the season because they just weren't gelling. And that had trickle-down effect on the rest of the defense. And, you know, when your team is going good or even above average, and you have a game like you did, say, in Dallas, where you're down 4-0 before you know what hit you, you can walk out of the rink going, well, okay, well, we had an off day, and it's 1 of 82, and it's fine. But when you're as far back as the Edmonton Oilers are, and you've struggled, that's just another mental. Your psyche is such that it's just two steps back, maybe three steps back. So it's harder from a confidence standpoint to get it together as well. And that's so it's an unfortunate treadmill they're on right now. They're going round and round, spinning their wheels. They're on a long road trip, which is going to end in Vegas, by the way, on Saturday. So, you know, get ready for that because Vegas is coming in rested after their 5-day break. So, you know, it's a massive disappointment. I do not see them, you know, gaining any traction to put a scare into a wild card spot, which is unfortunate because I think a lot of people were excited about what was happening out there. Yes, again. They were back. That this team with a lot of history in Stanley Cup playoffs was back, and they've got this new generational player to lead them there. And you know, listen, I'm not saying they won't get there and they can restart this thing next season, but this year looks to me like, unfortunately, a write-off.
And Connor McDavid, he's one of those players that picks his moments when he wants to speak out about something. And that loss to the Preds, the Oilers were right there. They tied the they scored the game-tying goal, but then it was called back for offside. That was one of 45 offside challenges now this year, and 22 goals in the league have been called back from it. And Connor McDavid, after the game, was saying, doesn't like the rule, thinks it slows down offense, gets rid of offense in the league. What's your take on that? And do you think we could see the rule changing?
Well, I think it has been reported by an excellent insider, Pierre Lebrun, who said that Colin Campbell is going to bring it up again at the general manager's meetings in March, and that he tried to tweak it last year, but he didn't get enough GMs to sign on. And one of the GMs who was resistant to tweak it was Peter Chiarelli, ironically. I guess the issue is the foot up in the air part of it. When your whole body is still onside, it's that back foot. In this case, his left foot on that play was you know, up in the air, which is the one black and white rule, or part of the rule, really. If it's up, then it's offside. So, to your point about taking away offense, you know, I watched a game last night, Minnesota Chicago. There was a long offside challenge by Bruce Boudreau on a goal that was scored, the opening goal of the game that was scored by Brent Seabrook. And the game, you know, the game's rocking along. It's a hard game. It's a division game, and the delay must have taken about a minute. So there's that, and the goal. Well, actually, no, the goal stood. So they got their power play out of it. Their Chicago did, but it delays the game. It takes goals off the board in a game where we want to see offense. And oftentimes, you know, the original rule was put in to get away with the egregious misses by linesmen, where a guy is 3 or 4 feet offside and for some reason they missed it, which happened once in a blue moon, but that's enough to be an embarrassment to the league. So they said, okay, we are really going to tighten this up. And like everything else in this world, everything swings way too far the other way. I do think there will be some adjustment. It'll come back towards the middle. I do think there'll be some tweaks. And I think there's a strong possibility we'll see a tweak before the Stanley Cup playoffs start, because they really need to correct this the long delays. I mean, think about it. The first goal of the Stanley Cup final last year, there was P.K. Subban scored. And there was a long delay, and ultimately that goal was taken off the board. Nashville scored first in Pittsburgh, and it was, again, so close. I think it was Forsberg who was ultimately ruled offside, but you could barely tell with all the cameras that CBC and NBC had in that building. And there you were in the Stanley Cup final with an important first goal wiped off. And I think ultimately they'd love to have that go away while still maintaining the integrity of an offside rule. So my belief is that, you know, these guys are not dummies. They can see what's happening and they will tweak it.
Dave Randorf, our guest. Do you look at, we're talking today as the Canadian Olympic team's about to be announced. It's not the announcement it would be. We won't have the debates about it that we always do have when our best players get chosen. And you and I are about the same age, so we'd even remember, we remember Nagano going forward with NHL, but Lake Placid, Sarajevo, even Calgary in 88. And I even there was probably more a sense of excitement because those were younger players, the Kirk Mullers, the Russ Cardinals, the Doug Lidsters. We knew we'd know those players. And then obviously Eric Lindros in Albertville, Paul Kariya was on that Lillehammer team. How are you? You're a hockey fan and we all are. And I feel a little melancholy today about it all. I don't know how I'm going to process. I guess we think we'll all get in and dive deep and learn more and watch the games and have fun with it, but it's not, it feels like clearly a letdown not to have the best players there at such a marquee event.
Yeah, no question. I think I've said, you and I have talked about this before, I'm going to watch, you know, I'll watch either on PVR depending on when these games are. I've actually looked at the schedule yet, but you know, there's that too. You know, the fact of where they are and the time change and everything like that, I think it's going to take a little bit away from the luster of these games. But hey, that's the way it is. You can't always have the Olympic Games in London, about 5 hours away, or in the North American time zone. So, you know, that's fine. That's going to happen. In regards to the Olympic team, I'm like you. I think it's a huge miss always to not have the best hockey players in the world in this tournament. And the more guys, you know, I've been around a lot of locker rooms in the last month, and that question inevitably has come up during the morning skates to a lot of the top stars, and they're all saying the same thing, that there's nothing we can do about it now, and I came to grips with it a while ago, but I'm going to tell you right now, the closer we get, the more, you know, I'm reminded of the disappointment. You know, Eric Carlson said this to us last week when we were in Detroit, and we're extremely disappointed that we're not there to represent our country and have the opportunity to, as one of the best players, one of the better players, to not be there and have that experience and give the fans ultimately that experience as well. Because those are moments that, you know, once every 4 years and who knows what will happen next time around. You know, there's a part of me that understands owners saying, yes, well, they couldn't get, they didn't get what they felt they needed out of the arrangement to make it worthwhile and have their players go away for the better part of 3 weeks to risk injury, to have their buildings dark, and to stop the league. You know, I do get that side of it too, for sure. I just think all around it's a big disappointment. I'm not blaming one side or the other. But I feel good for a lot of these other guys, that some of whom have played in the NHL and some of whom would love to play in the NHL one day. It's a little different from the days of the 1988 teams and 84 teams and 92, because back then, there weren't 31 teams. And there were less jobs in the NHL, and there were good players outside the league that could still fight their way in. Now it seems like everybody's already pre-identified, and you've got more and more kids coming in at 18, 19, and 20. Look at Boston. They've got 20-year-olds all up and down their lineup, and they're rolling. And so, you know, it will be an uphill battle even for a lot of these guys, as well as they play. They'll get some looks and they'll get pro opportunities, but whether or not it'll actually translate into something significant in the National Hockey League down the road, I wish them all the best. But I think ultimately you're looking at just these guys going there with the mindset that this is an incredible opportunity that they wouldn't get, you know, otherwise if the arrangement wasn't the way it was. And hats off to them, because a lot of these guys, I don't know how much you follow it, you know, they've given up months of their life, and they've gone overseas and they've taken jobs and cities and away from their families, and they've gone into tournaments to represent Canada, the Deutschland Cup and the Spengler Cup, and there's been camps and there's been, I'm sure, meetings and video scouting sessions, and there's probably guys on pins and needles as we sit recording this thing right now, mm-hmm, hoping to wear that maple leaf, and I love that. And the guys who've scratched and clawed to even get to this point, big stick tap to all those guys, because I would trade places with them in a minute. And ultimately, the guys who get on the plane to go represent our country, you know, that's why I'm going to watch, because I love the game and I love the commitment that goes along with getting to that spot for these guys.
Yeah, and even the two, the American team gets mentioned, and Brian Giant is almost 40, and he's going to play.
Yeah.
We had James Wisniewski on our morning show, who I saw 8 times a year doing Saginaw games when he was with Plymouth, and he played he's won everywhere internationally. He told us he was the last cut for Vancouver. They took Ryan Whitney. Brian Burke took Ryan Whitney just ahead of James Wisniewski, and it was that close, and they were friends, and he was happy for him. But yeah, there he is. You swallow some pride. We all have to at some point. And he's 33 and he wants a way back, and he's riding the buses in Germany and he gets to play. It's funny telling that story. I forgot. We looked up the stuff this morning on the Sarajevo team. Kirk Muller was on the Canadian Olympic team in 84 and he was 17 and he was about to be drafted that year. That's the Mario draft. I don't know whether they could have asked Mario to play or not. I feel like we would have known more about it, but maybe he refused. But Kirk Muller ended up being the number 2 overall pick about 3 months after playing at Sarajevo. And you love that commitment because he could have shredded his ACL and anything could have happened, but he wanted so badly to play for Canada at that age. And then he went right back to Guelph and finished his junior season. I love stories like that.
And there will be stories that come out of this. There will be great stories that we don't know yet that will be told by the CBC crew over there and the NBC crews. There will be great stories on these hockey teams that come out of it. And something tells me that the Olympics are a special thing. You know, a lot of people have their opinions about the rings and the money that's involved and the IOC privilege and all that kind of stuff. And all that's true. You can't put your head in the sand and bury, you know, what you know to be true. And the cheating that goes along with it, Russia not competing and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of unfortunate aspects, but man, something about the Olympics, as far as I'm concerned, once they start, I try to block all that other stuff out and just enjoy what is the purest form of competition where you have to be right. Once every 4 years, you got to wake up that day and all that training, all that commitment, all that desire, all those dreams come down to one day. And there's no other shot. There's no redo. And I love it in all the events. And I'm looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to the stories that emerge from that Canadian hockey team.
We can't let you go without talking about what's happening or maybe not happening in the CFL right now with Johnny Manziel. If Johnny Manziel goes to the Ticats and gets what he's asking for, which is max money, what will that say and do to the league?
Well, I think a lot of the reaction, the negative reaction, was, you know, due to the agent, Burkhardt, Eric Burkhardt is his name, right, Greg? Eric?
Yeah, Eric Burkhardt, that's right.
Eric Burkhardt, yeah, well-known.
Good agent. And that's a good reach without having it right in front of you, man. Nobody's got the recall you do. That was great.
Oh, I don't know. Your recall's pretty darn good. But your recall's for useless stuff, which I love. It's great. That's one of the things I admire.
It's a compliment.
Yeah, I didn't ask for these powers. They just came to me. They haven't helped me get very far, I can tell you that.
Yes. Anyway, and the agent is the agent. That's what agents do. They don't care. Their job is to maximize the return for their clients, and they're not out there to win any popularity contest. So I think a lot of people got their back up just because of what he said. And listen, we don't get our max dollars here. We'll go somewhere else. And everybody's going, really? Where are you going to go, Johnny Manziel? I mean, everybody that loves the CFL, that is passionate about the CFL, gets their back up. And I'm one of them. I didn't necessarily get my back up because I understand the agent part of it, but I do get my back up if Manziel thinks that he's just going to step into the Canadian Football League and dominate. That's what gets my back up. Guys who come in and don't respect those who have come before and those who don't really have any knowledge not only about the league but where they are living and the people who come out to support these teams, it's not the NFL. And it's not the huge multi-million dollar salaries and the lifestyle. And if he starts making that show me the money thing in Hamilton, I don't think that's going to go over very well because Hamilton is still very much a blue collar crowd, particularly the people that go to those games. And God bless them, because that's what this league is built on. And I know I can list off 100 guys who've come up with no inkling as to where the heck they were going, had no idea where Regina was, or Winnipeg, or Vancouver for that matter, and now live there full-time and are never going home, and love the years that they were given by the Canadian Football League and the fans and people surrounding it. So if he wants to come in and be a player and be a star, come on in, because he's got a great skill set, and I think it is built for the Canadian Football League, and I'll sit down, and I'll get my popcorn ready, and I'll watch. But if he's going to disrespect the league and be a clown off the field and bring all that baggage that comes with him, then you know what, Eric, go shop him somewhere else as far as I'm concerned, because I love this league and I don't, we don't need guys in the, we'll be fine without Johnny Manziel. If that's the Johnny Manziel we're going to get, if he's going to come up and play and compete and want to win, then I got all the time in the world to watch him and support this move. But if it's going to be a sideshow, then save it. I don't want to see it. Yeah. I don't want any part of it, just like a lot of fans.
Mm-hmm. It could be, that's well said, it could be a pretty humbling process either way. So you've got Winnipeg.
You know, there's a long list, yeah. Greg, of guys who thought they were going to come up here and be here for a couple months, reestablish themselves as a player, and go back. And listen, I got no qualms about a guy who wants to get back to the NFL. I get that. No problem. But while you're here, respect where you are.
I mean, is there a more quintessential example than Doug Flutie? He didn't come in thinking he owned the world. He was humbled by it really not working out. There's a Heisman Trophy winner. He's on talk shows when he's the most recognizable college football player probably for a half decade before and maybe even after him. And he comes up and it doesn't all come to him right away at all. And he worked at it and he processed it and he learned what the dimensions were and the 12 men on the field and he became a legend. He really did.
I was working local sports in Vancouver when he came in, when Murray Pezum brought him in and Joe Kapp. And he was there super early, reported early before training camp, and he was out at the Lions training facility in Surrey, BC, doing wind sprints and working on just he was constantly working. And he wasn't coasting in going, look at me, I'm up here, and you know, where am I again? No, there was never any of that. And to this day, he loves the years that he had in the Canadian Football League and often comes back for big moments, and that's great to see.
So two Minnesota Wild games. It's the Winnipeg Jets, who we didn't talk about enough, and we will next time, but we're going to get to talk about them lots in April and May, the way they're rolling and maybe raising a division banner. It's a great story there. So we'll be watching on Saturday and Vancouver at 8 o'clock. And sandwiched in there will be nothing but Vikings mania at your hotel and the surrounding, 20-mile radius, given there's that everybody in the state must be going nuts about a home Super Bowl. The closest we've got is Joe Montana playing at Stanford the year he beat Dan Marino. But it's never – lots of options, but it's never happened before, and they're two wins away.
I know. And they must be – I'm looking forward to just taking in a little bit of that vibe. And the game is obviously – we'll be working Sunday, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of Vikings jerseys even at the hockey game. The stadium itself, I've never been – but I've flown in several times now, just flying over this stadium. The stadium is unbelievable. I've got to make it there. We've all got to make it there one time because it just looks like an incredible building. Even to see as you fly over Minneapolis and land in St. Paul, it's an incredible sight. And so, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. So I hope everybody enjoys all the games.
Thanks very much for coming on. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And don't let that Eric Thomas, push you around.
I know. Throwing my phone out of my hands on the desk.
We don't know each other that well, but I think you got a little pushback in you, Carolyn. So you don't let that happen anymore.
Thank you.
You should see what she did to his car soon afterwards.
Why do you have to bring that up? Keep it between us.
Yeah. All right. Well, I really enjoyed I listened to the last one we did. So it's a great podcast, guys, and keep it going. And thanks for having me on.
Well, you're having a great season yourself, and we know we'll see more of you in April and May too. And it's a great weekend to focus on again, two really important matchups and two Canadian teams, maybe different directions. But like I said, I think we're all dialing in a little bit more on the story Winnipeg is. It's too bad. I was going to say Edmonton's been so bad that it's almost taken away from how good Winnipeg is, and we don't want it to, right?
Yeah, you know, they're legit, and they're running teams out of the barn in Winnipeg, and they're playing very, very well, and that would be a very exciting place to be when the playoffs roll around, because they're going to make the playoffs. I think that's a given now. So,
all right, safe travels to the most Canadian American city in the NHL. I think it's safe to say
it's
not Vegas or San Jose. It's Minneapolis/St. Paul. But thanks for doing this for us.
Okay, buddy, and let's keep on trying to make a lunch happen down the road.
I know. It's really weeks and months sail by, but busy is good, right? Busy is better than non-busy, less busy, something like that. Thanks, Dave.
Exactly. Have a great weekend, guys.
Thank you.
You got it. Take care.
So if people are wondering what we're talking about with Eric Thomas slapping a phone out of my hands, we did it on Sportsnet Central because we were making fun of how an NBA player, it happened in an NBA game where there's a fan who was taking a picture And player's like, buddy, you are not taking my picture, and just swatted the phone.
Do you think there'll be a subsequent, like when Dennis Rodman kicked that cameraman, that guy didn't have to work for 6 years. That was like 20 years ago. I mean, we're in a very litigious society. Do you think
it's true?
Could he say, I at least need a new phone? Like maybe a phone for life? Maybe that would have lasted. You never would have replaced it.
Maybe. There's an idea. See, for us, we were acting not well on my end.
I don't know about
that.
But
it was just my case, so everything's fine.
Did you have several different takes, or was that a one-take slap?
No, it was actually, we had to do second take.
Do you feel like if you were an actress and you had to slap somebody, male or female, you could pull it off without hurting them? Or would
absolutely
you? Like, some
not.
People really get hurt with those.
Don't you do a fake one, though? You do. Right?
You can make, yeah, there's a sound.
Know. I'm not much of an actress, I think, as evidence.
Sometimes it's meant to connect, though. Sometimes people do get hurt and they
I
get
guess.
Bloody noses while they're acting and whatnot.
I don't know much about the film business, so.
Well, you just documented your performance art from last night.
That's, I wonder
there's
if
no
I have
teleprompter
an
that helps you whack a phone out of somebody or look surprised or stunned.
Maybe I have an IMDb account now.
That could be it.
Probably.
That could be it. Time, believe it or not, I know it just feels like we got started. But it's time to do what up with,
nice.
With that, yeah, at some point.
There's the music.
We have four stories of note, of substance. We each have two. Things that might surprise each other and things that might surprise our audience. Or but you also want to talk about LeVar Ball.
I do.
Okay.
For maybe the last time.
You've said that before.
I know.
Maybe not.
Yeah, well, so Steve Kerr this week, he said what we've all been thinking but haven't been able to maybe verbalize. Is that LeVar Ball is the Kardashian of the NBA, and that he is making life hard for the Lakers, for his son, and for Luke Walton, who he's basically trying to get fired. And Steve Kerr was kind of blaming the media, saying, you're having to cover this, whether your bosses are saying you should, or this is the U.S. media he's talking to. And it's just getting to the point where I am with Steve Kerr, and I am saying enough is enough. Why are we talking about LeVar Ball? There's no reason to.
I know. You hear the same stuff over and over again, and I have a tough time not reacting to it, and I try not to inject it into our show in the morning. But then it's really interesting, isn't it? Because NBA coaches are getting criticized because they want to limit access. And then when you get into there, they want to limit access of people who are interviewing LeVar Ball and giving him attention. But I don't know that you can do that per se, because if your boss says, hey, LeVar Ball is coming on set when the Lakers come to Toronto and he's traveling, and you're like,
I know.
I guess it's something you could battle about. Somebody could say editorially, I've done that with guests. I'm like, I'm not sure I think there's more cons than pros to some scenarios, and you say so, but sometimes you don't get what you want at the end of the day. Not everyone does. He might be squeezed in between you and Eric slapping phones out of both your hands in a couple weeks, because I think they're here at the end of the month, the Lakers are. But maybe he doesn't come back from Lithuania in time. He feels like he's happy over there.
Maybe he'll stay there.
These poor kids. That youngest kid is 16. He's not in high school. He doesn't play pro basketball in Lithuania.
Is education important?
I know. There you go. You got to play that E-card, the education card. But I think it's a good message for Steve Kerr to send.
It was a very good one.
Plus, there's not even just one Kardashian. He called LeVar the Kardashian. Who is that, Kim? I don't know.
Maybe he said the Kardashians. Maybe I'm misquoting in anger.
And will Tristan Thompson be upset? Because you're like, that's my fiance you're talking about here. They're not married yet, are they? I don't remember.
No.
Do you keep track of that stuff?
They are engaged.
Thanks.
And are going to have a baby.
Okay. That's half. I was going to say that's half the battle, but I don't know what that means.
It's your entertainment update for the
A very Canadian way to melt ice. A Canadian man with no salt. This is the excuse. He had no salt, so he thought, I got to take care of this sidewalk. People will slip and fall. I might get sued. I live in Saskatchewan. He used a blowtorch to melt the ice that covered the sidewalk in front of his house. Yes, heat should melt. Hot things should melt cold things. But I would think there's and maybe some people are more. I've never operated a blowtorch. Some men have.
I never have, and I don't think it would be a good idea for me to.
Well, not. But I guess if you were molding something, yes. But not in a public. Like
nope.
I just think in a subdivision, this draws a real crowd of people
doesn't
wondering.
Sound safe.
No. So the video now it's on YouTube shows the man methodically moving the torch back and forth, because that's what you do. To melt the ice without damaging the concrete. And I'm not thinking that's almost impossible, not to leave some concrete structural damage. Not that there's going to be like a sinkhole like the one we have in Toronto right now, but maybe.
Here's an idea. Use sand.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah. Sand is preferable to, people get them confused. Sometimes I don't know if I'm behind a sander or a salter. And then I see the stuff coming out of the truck.
And it's neither.
Truck. It can be neither at different points in time. It's garbage. Exactly. I'm falling too closely behind a trash compactor.
Some of my coworkers are telling me it's too late to say Happy New Year. I say, no, it's not. If you haven't seen someone in 2018 yet, you can still say Happy New Year. That's my belief.
There must be a deadline. Valentine's Day? Groundhog Day?
Yeah.
St. Patrick's Day?
Probably end of January, I think.
Okay.
It's too late.
So it's New Year's month?
Yes.
For you.
People still have their New Year's resolutions, I'm sure. Apparently, 60% of people drop their New Year's resolution or cheat on it within the first week. How are you doing with your New Year's resolutions?
I have one. I guess I have it's a physical one. My brother-in-law decided at the start of last year that he would run 1,000 miles in the year. So I said, I'll run 1,000 miles this year. And I'm on a very good pace to do that right now. I ran 20 from January 1. I went to the gym January 1st at like 8 in the morning. Doesn't mean I've gone every day, but so far in 1 week, and if you extrapolate this out, in 1 week I ran 27.75 miles last week in
wow.
7 days.
That's good.
Some days zero, but 8.25 January 1st, 6.4 January 3rd. So the goal has to be, so you're basically doing you're doing less than 100 a month, about 88 miles a month. And I think I can do that. But I hate
That's
running outside, and it's bad for my knees, and pavement is bad.
Though.
It's the treadmill. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I hate the treadmill.
I love it. I think better on it. I don't have to worry about dodging cars. I don't have to worry about people not seeing me. I see no one in front of me but the clock. I can time myself.
Oh, it goes by so slowly.
It does do that. But I'm not a hiker either. I think you love the outdoors so much. I saw all your Instagram pictures. You're hiking, you're skiing, you're chairlifts, you're here, you're there, all during Christmas, right? Did you do anything you didn't
do
before?
Like getting outside.
Any firsts over
no.
the...
No, no firsts.
You've never jumped out of an airplane or
no,
heliskied?
No, I'm very afraid of heights.
Yeah.
So that will never happen. Yeah, my New Year's resolutions, I've been sick. So I really haven't done much.
So it's get healthy.
Yeah.
As opposed to stay healthy, get healthy.
Get healthy.
It's both those those things.
I'll get there, maybe. Hopefully. One thing too I've noticed, you drink a lot of Perrier, but you're now using the Soda Stream.
Yeah.
Which is good for you. That's better than drinking Coke or Pepsi.
It's not really a conversion. Now I do like my soda. If I go to the theater, if I go to the movies, with or without children. I will see soda and I'll be like, I want as much as I can possibly. All you can drink soda would be bad for me at a movie theater because you're trapped for 2 hours. But Diet Coke has 4 new flavors. Two I like, the idea of ginger lime and feisty cherry. I would give that a go. I would not go with twisted mango or zesty blood orange. I need to be in the marketing meeting that decided Zesty Blood Orange was a good name. Because unless you're a vampire or some kind of advocate for the zombie apocalypse, it sounds cannibalistic almost.
Yeah.
To call something Zesty Blood Orange.
I don't drink...
Who bleeds orange? Nobody.
I don't drink Coke or Pepsi, so...
Ginger ale when you're sick is good for you.
Yeah, I don't know if that when you're sick would be good for you is to have...
Are you just saying this?
Soda.
Are you just saying this because you may not be a huge fan of Donald Trump and he drinks like 13 Diet Cokes per day? And maybe lucky to be alive just for that reason alone.
That's an excellent point. I've never liked Coke or Pepsi, ever.
And now you like it less.
Yeah.
For that reason. We have to go. We should go. We're both tired. And we'll be back next week. We're not supposed to talk about it. But thanks to Dave Randorf, who's off to the wonderful Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, for coming on our podcast.
Yes. We'll see you next week for episode of We Lost Count.
24 next week.
Sure. Let's go with that.
That completes a 24 case of beer or
that's
Diet
true.
Coke.
Mm-hmm.
Zesty Blood Orange Diet Coke. Case of 24. Thanks so much for listening. You can rate us on iTunes and catch fresh new product from Carolyn and myself next week.
Take care.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on sportsnet.ca/590.